Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the Complimentary Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Katie Langerman, joined as always by Anthony Hobday. And today we have a very special guest, one of my coworkers, Lucas Opperman, actually first guest of the pod ever. So, and I just said the pod. Ugh, that's such a cheesy thing to say. I can't undo it.
I was going to say something.
Ugh, gross. Friend of the pod, Lucas Opperman. Lucas, thanks for coming on today. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to be talking more about color. Last week we talked about typography, and we're basically going through the three pillars of visual design, I think is what we called it in a previous episode we had. And Anthony and I were discussing color, and I just kept referencing you, Lucas. Like, yeah, we're talking about design system stuff, and I'm like, I'm not really the color person at work. That's kind of Lucas's area of expertise. So we thought it would be fun to have you on and pick your brain a little bit and get your perspective.
I think it's a rare opportunity because it's having a color person at all who you work with is it's sort of like having an illustrator, but even more special. Because even having an illustrator in-house is wonderful, but having a color person in-house, you know, that's it's good expertise to call on.
Yeah. Do you see yourself as the person who owns all of the color, or am I just making that assumption about you?
No, I mean, I work in color a lot. I don't see myself as like this person who owns all the color stuff, but I
maybe
mean,
not own.
I guess I slid into this a little bit.
You did, yeah, because you're kind of an expert, from my opinion anyways. You have the space to sort of go deep on some topics that not everybody, you know, as you know, when you work on design systems, you're like sometimes broadly touching a lot of different things, but color is one that you sort of have to like do a deep dive on to fully understand. So
definitely.
Yeah, I try to defer to you as much as possible.
Is it true, Lucas, that you know the maximum values of the R, G, and B channels?
Yeah,
I've been asking around. Yeah, I've been asking around, and I just some people say it's 180, some people say it's 300. I don't know what's going on.
It's a very, very secret knowledge. You have to work years and years.
I heard you know about the fourth secret channel that does alpha as well. If you want transparency,
but which... that is like very dark magic, I'd say.
Yeah, but I assume if someone at where you work, if someone has a question about color, are you their first thought? Is that a good way to describe your sort of position?
Within our team, maybe. Outside, I guess, probably not, because, I mean, it's a huge company, so.
Yeah, I guess. But they're not allowed to think about color outside of the primary design system. If they're thinking about color, something has gone wrong.
Let's just add a new color to the palette.
It does. Yes. That's a bad thing. Well, yes. So how should we go about this conversation today? I have a couple of like topics that I want to touch on. Anthony, do you have anything in particular? From my perspective, I want to hear some of your rules, because I know for sure you have some rules and principles that you follow with color.
I think if it was any other situation, it was just me and Lucas, I'd be grilling you, Lucas, sort of like an interview about your background and how that leads to what you're doing now. And so I might have some questions like that to throw in there.
Yeah. Maybe we should start with that.
Talking about yourself. Yeah, well, my first question was going to be, how does one become, well, not how does one, because I know that often career paths aren't really generalizable. How did you come to specialize in color?
It was very happenstance in a way. So I kind of like got into design systems at large and style guides and all those things. And then I think color is just one of the really big topics. And what I find very interesting is that, I don't know, maybe it's just because I work so much on color, but you can go very deep in color, and there are so many layers and nuances and like accessibility and also like color perception from, on the one side, of course, like physiologically, I guess, but also emotionally, how people perceive colors and how colors are connotated in different countries, and all those things are very interesting to me. Also, like, the whole color theory behind it is kind of interesting, although I'm not an expert at all on color theory or anything. And I just kind of fell into this by working on color a lot. I mean, that's kind of the truth, I guess. I'm not an artist or anything, so.
But you do have some sort of theoretical background where you've gone and studied that, or is it mostly from practical exposure?
I mean, I just have a normal design education, so that is more practical. I mean, I studied design, of course, there's a little bit of color in this, but not specializing on color or anything.
I'm curious about, because I think he's a fellow countryman, and I don't want to pronounce his name, but it's called The Interaction of Color, the book.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you've... Yeah, I'm sure you have a copy. Yeah,
yeah. I think I have the book. Maybe I also just I got into the habit of getting a lot of books from the library, just because otherwise you have too many books.
You can give them back. Yeah, yeah. But can you say his name so that I don't have to?
Only if you say it first, because I forgot the name. I'm really bad with names.
Okay, yeah. So I think it's Josef Albers.
Yeah, Josef Albers. That's how I'd say it. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that's like tomato. No, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, so I brought that up because that was sort of the most interesting color theory book I've ever read, just because it is so practical, even though it's a bit, I don't know the way to describe it. It's not like wishy-washy because he's very direct about everything, but it is a bit out there in terms of the way he approaches color theory. He doesn't really talk about color wheels. He talks about sort of getting pieces of paper and putting them side by side and figuring out their visual relationships. I found that really interesting. And so that's what I consider, I guess, a sort of a practical theoretical approach to color, which is as deep as I've ever gone. And so I was curious about how your journey has sort of compared to that kind of approach.
I think his way and why he is more practical is because of his teaching probably, right? Because he did a lot of work with students because like he taught about color. And I think the problem with color is that it is really hard to define and put into boxes. And that's what is really hard about it. Like you can work on colors for years and years and still kind of know nothing in a way. And I guess it's also, I've heard, I think this is like tacit knowledge in a way. Tacit knowledge, to my understanding, is knowledge that you learn through experience, right? Not through just learning it. And I guess this is also his approach. And it's kind of how I got into color as well. And most people start off learning is more that you do stuff and then you maybe read up on something that you are currently doing to understand what you're doing or how to do it well. And that's kind of how I got into this as well. Same with like all these different color spaces and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Same with accessibility. Like I don't have an accessibility background, but then when you start working color, you get into accessibility and then you read on more stuff and then you're kind of sensitized to this. So that's kind of a little bit how I got into this. I would have loved to have a teacher like him or somebody who had very practical stuff. We did a little bit of like painting, like different colors and things. But also I feel, I don't know, I studied, I was still very young and you want to get into like designing websites and stuff and you don't really want to do all this weird abstract color stuff. I would have liked to do this, like, I don't know, 10 years later or something.
I love the word sensitized you mentioned because it's quite an important concept, I think. Even if you only read one book about a design topic, maybe it's a much bigger topic than that one book represents. I felt that same value where you've become sort of familiar with the topic and now you are more aware of it everywhere you see it. Just like, I mean, I think we made the joke last time about your t-shirt that said Kern or Kerning, but it had the gap in it. And people make jokes all the time about how if you introduce a non-designer to Kerning or bad Kerning, they see it everywhere. Suddenly, and they didn't see it. So they've become sensitized to it. So I quite like that concept you brought up, because even if you read one book about accessibility, suddenly you're probably more aware of it. And that's the important thing in a lot of cases.
That's true. Yeah, I feel especially with color. I mean, you know, you've heard of color blindness before, but without actually seeing it, it's hard to understand what that actually means. And you just feel, okay, the person can see red and they have a sweatshirt and don't know what color it is. But you don't really understand that it could be an interface and they see nothing or just can't understand if it's an error or a success or whatever. And I've had people that I talked about this stuff, error messages, for example, with, and they were kind of shocked because they did design like cool looking UIs with red and green outlines. And before that, just didn't think about that. If you can't see red and green, you don't know what it means at all. And yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been monopolizing you enough, I think. maybe we should get to one of Katie's questions.
No, I really like that. It's very much related to design systems where we all sort of just learn what we need to when we need to learn, like to dive deep into something. We don't have knowledge of every single part of design systems at all times. It's just whatever you're working on, you got to dive into it. So that's very cool. Maybe we should kind of gear towards some of the design system related topics that I have. I have, like, last time we talked about typography, we were talking about type skills, and I was complaining a lot about having like way too many options in a type skill, just because you feel like you need to cover the full spectrum of all options, of all like heading options, like having six different heading styles. I want to hear Lucas's thoughts on color scales, because you and I have worked extensively on them together. And something I see, like, I sort of have an opinion on, but I'm unsure, but most design systems will have like a full-on color scale of like almost the whole rainbow, and then many, many shades of each color. So usually like 9 or 10 shades of each color. And sometimes it feels like a bit too much, or like a little bit overkill. Like what would happen if you just picked a few colors you know you actually need as your like semantic colors, maybe an accent color, your like gray, shades of gray. Shades of gray, maybe you do need 10 options, but, and then you picked, you know, different states for those colors, like hover, active, or like a lighter version, a darker version. It's like a little bit more specific to what you're actually going to be using it for, versus what I think people kind of fall into this trap of, like, I have a design system, I must have 10 shades of each color because that's what palettes look like. But yeah, I've seen kind of both options. So I'm curious, Lucas, what are your thoughts on it? Like, your personal thoughts, if you were to, you know, make your own design system, what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, I do like the idea of having only individual colors, and for specific things, like maybe you only need one yellow. Yellow is especially complicated because you have a hard time getting dark yellows that don't look brown. I think it depends on the whole organization a little bit. For us, I think we are so big, the issue that you run into potentially is that people need a color and you don't have the color and they just make up the color, right? That's kind of the other side of the coin in a way. I generally do like to kind of cut it down and trim it down to only the colors you need. You mentioned before the presentational color stuff I'm working on. This is kind of a little bit of the idea. I mean, we do have color scales anyway, but to have colors that have this whole spectrum, like have 10 different shades, but are used for only specific use cases. So kind of we say, don't use this apart from if you maybe do graphs or do like very, I don't know, like a user can choose a color for a certain thing, like a label or something, then you can use those. Otherwise, just stick to the defaults. But I mean, we still have a lot of states in our kind of scales. Another thing that I kind of, I think Katie, you and I looked at the, is it Radix UI?
Yeah, I don't know how to say Radix.
I don't know. But they have a table of what to use which color for. And if you actually build a table with different hover and pressed states and borders and all those things and need the correct contrast ratios, you very, very quickly get to 10 colors. Yeah. So the question there is, of course, do you actually need all of them for all colors? And probably not, in most cases not. So yeah, that's the thing. But then also, I think the last thing that I think it's kind of an expectation from the users of your design system and also from people out there on the internet. So of course, a lot of people, if they build a design system, they want to have nice docs and want to kind of promote it. It just looks really nice, right?
It does
so
look cool.
I think that is one of the things as well.
Maybe, yeah, for something like Radix, I don't know how to say it either, where it's like kind of a generic theming system in that you as the consumer of it would pick a few colors from that system. Like you'd pick your accent color, you'd pick your semantic colors. So it needs to have like several different kinds of greens, and like they'd have like a turquoise or like a very blue green and a very green green and a yellow green. That makes sense to me. I think it's with like internal design systems that are used for one product where you specifically know what your accent color is and success warning, et cetera, where it gets a little like fuzzy as to how much complexity you really need. But I love how they have that table that explains exactly how to use each shade. Same with Adobe Spectrum, I think, has that, where they have like different contrast ratios. So it's really clear which, for any color, what you can use for a border or a foreground color or a background color. So it kind of depends maybe on the system.
I mean, maybe one point is also for people who actually work on a system where they can only choose specific colors. It of course makes it much easier to make them accessible. If you know you only have this one yellow and you put black on top of it and this has a good contrast, then you are all set. And if you have all those different shades, it's much more complicated to actually make them all match in different ways and still be accessible and have those correct contrast ratios.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like one of the points in that process where maybe you can reduce the number of colors in your palette, if you start with this massive list of, you know, 10 colors and 10 shades for each or something, there's a lot of products who would never need all 100, but it feels like one of the main ways you reduce that number is by deciding what those colors are each used for. And so you could say, for example, red is only used for destructive actions. We're not going to use it as a brand color or any different shades. We just need this one shade of red, for example. And so there's that tricky challenge where you get a full complement of colors before you decide what they're used for. But once you've decided what they're used for, you still have this full complement because people don't want to lose their lovely palette of 100 colors that they could be using. But actually, I found in the past that it really helps to say, actually, we only need this purple for one thing. And so we're going to reduce that down to two shades that we know we need, just so we don't have the choice anymore. I expect that problem gets much worse at a larger organization, or it's much harder to sort of say up front, or a larger product even, much harder to say up front, these are the colors we need. Whereas if you have a much smaller product, a smaller team, you can sort of get together and agree, okay, we don't need these eight shades of these three colors because we know they're only going to be for, warning messages or something. So, I imagine part of the problem is convincing people to give up some of their lovely palette. And I think part of the issue is that a lot of those design systems that people start with are very open-ended. And actually, once they start getting used, they become much more closed-ended. That's not a phrase.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's very true. I think what you would need to do, though, if you have, let's say, only two purples, you need to rename them, right? Because I think another thing is, if you have scales of 10 and then you have a purple scale with 200 and 500 in it, that feels weird to a lot of people. And I mean, I guess you could also just get used to it, but of course you could also translate them into just semantic tokens or semantic colors and just say, this is the button purple or whatever. And then you would be all fine. It's probably a way of getting used to it. I mean, that is pretty true. I think a good approach.
I'm lucky enough to work on a product now where, there's very few designers, and so I've had a big part to play in how the app looks, especially because after I joined, we sort of redesigned it slightly. And so now I'm trying to be as allergic to color as possible, which is a bit bit of a shame given the topic of today's podcast. But today's pod.
Oh, no.
Welcome to the pod. so I'm basically allergic to as much color as possible, and we only ever add color to the app now, which is relatively grayscale, when we really need it, which means it's a massive impact when we do use it. You know, we use it, for example, only for selected elements. We use this blue. And so we're not going to use that blue for anything else, I don't think, which is great. You know, it means that the color choices become a lot easier. And suddenly, if you do need a color, there's a huge palette to choose from, but we're not going to go there every time. Luckily, I've got no other designers who have different opinions from me, sort of disagreeing with me and starting arguments, because that's what happened at my last job. People were adding color for... just for visual impact, really. And I was saying, hey, what if we only use color when it means something specific, sort of practical? And people laughed at me. There was a meeting full of people all involved in the design, and they all laughed at me, just the idea of, you know, trying not to use color. So who's laughing now, people I used to work with?
Is that a principle of yours, to sort of just keep it towards like a meaningful impact by using color?
If it's up to me, basically I'll do black and white and then only add color for sort of denotive reasons when they mean something in the interface, just because I find that so much more striking and visually bold, and it's such an easy way to get a product that looks interesting. Whereas if you end up using all 100 colors, you know, different shades and everything, it ends up looking like a real mess. So I'm going to do whatever I can to avoid that end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Which is actually quite fitting to call it a spectrum in this episode. Usually when I talk about spectrums, they are, metaphorical spectrums. But here they are literal. Well, not quite literal, but yeah.
I actually had the complete opposite a few products ago, where we had there was a rebrand and we couldn't use any color. So it was just grayscale, black and white, no shadows. Mm. So, and it was very interesting. I mean, it was somewhat easy with contrast, of course, and accessibility in this case, but it is really hard to design a complete product like this. And it was like a product that was across mobile, web, and on TV. So it was very complex. It was okay. It was it had a lot of media content. So you had colorful pictures in there. So we didn't need that for visual interest, but it was a very interesting experience because you are so used to having your interactive color, like the blue or whatever. And some other colors to, I don't know, drive the attention to a certain part of the UI. And now you have to do it very differently.
What were some ways that how did you show state, and what are some strategies that you used to work around that to show interactivity?
We did have color grayscale changes a little bit for interactivity. Mm. We had to drive the, to basically, we have had a lot of black and white contrast to have strong contrast. And then of course inverse, because we had light and dark mode. We used outlines for some kind of states as well. But of course this is more for selection states. And then on TV, because you have a remote, you need you need to see where you are. So you need to see the current interest. And I think there, to be fair, in the end, they did add a color back because we did user testing and it was just way too hard to see where you are on the TV because you have no direct connection, right? But I think that was mainly the way. I mean, it was, because it was media, it was fairly simple because you kind of click things. And for example, if you have a carousel of cards, you can increase or decrease size, for example, to show which one is currently selected or you focus on or whatever. So we did those kind of things and some animations as well.
Mm-hmm. That's the dream for me, is that you try everything you can to avoid color and then you do testing and you find out you need one color. And so you add it in and it's just chef's kiss, you know. I have to say chef's kiss because I can't show it. But that's the perfect setup for me. But I saw someone on someone who comes up on Twitter a lot for me. Should I call it Twitter? On X?
Yeah, no. We'll just keep calling it Twitter.
Someone who comes up on Nay Twitter a lot. They work on, I don't know what they are at the company exactly, but they work on, I think it's Obsidian, the note-taking app.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to try to remember their name because I'll forget it or I'll get it wrong. But he was playing with an e-ink mode, like a theme for Obsidian. And so that's basically sort of what you're describing, but even more extreme, because it's basically a one-bit color system on or off, you know, the pixels. And I've also played with that idea myself because I really love that idea as a constraint in terms of let's only use pure black or pure white, or, you know, an off black or an off white. It adds a lot of restrictions, and you start to see, if you try that, how useful color is, how useful even shades of gray are. But it's always an interesting challenge, especially for a design system, because like you're saying, Katie, states become a bit of a nightmare, and you have to start using patterns that people won't recognize just to represent states that they see all the time, which maybe it's too far in one direction.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, one thing you also have to always keep in mind is that we don't just design for us, right? So it also has to somehow be nice for the users, and it has to sell. And there are specific expectations. I mean, it depends on the market always, right? But I guess it's also sometimes hard to do an all black and white product, depending how you do it. I mean, kind of Vercel is pretty much all black and white, apart from some tiny things, I think. So they kind of pulled that off pretty well. But consumer products are also you need to sell, right? If you don't sell, one part of the design is selling as well. So that is also part of the job. So sometimes I guess you need color. And then if you have graphs and stuff like this, it works. And of course, for accessibility, it's better if you just use black and white and then have different, I don't know, line styles or whatever with dots and things. But it can also get kind of very boring, let's say visually boring, to be frank. So yeah, I think that that is also an aspect that is interesting. And sometimes those like design, like design aesthetic things don't really go well with the mass market, let's say.
You just give me an idea where someone sells a mobile app or an app or something, you know, that it's a free to use app, but the upsell, the in-app purchase is to add more denotive colors to the app. And so we're going to do it. We're going to do it one bit black and white by default. If you want a color for every interactive element, for example, you can buy that. We'll make them purple. And so you just add those in more and more. And if people want loads of colors, they can pay, you know, £20 or whatever. But if they only want one color, they can just pay the £1.
Wow.
So, I mean, that would be an interesting approach, just because as a designer who's designing those upsells, you'd have to think about what's the priority of these denotive colors. You know, which is the most important color to add, which is what designers should be thinking about anyway. They probably don't, because they've got access to 100 in front of them. They just use colors as much as they want.
Oh, that's good. I mean, a lot of people who write about layouts and stuff also suggest, and I think I heard that in design education a lot, that you design your UI or whatever in black and white first. Mm. And I mean, to be fair, I don't do this normally. I mean, I did this once, I think, but it's very tedious. But this idea of thinking about it in just like black and white is very interesting. And I mean, we do this kind of with wireframing already, if you do it right, yeah. I guess, or you can do it. But this is also, I think this goes kind of into what you're saying, right? That you kind of see where you need the focus and then you add in some color afterwards because something doesn't work anymore, maybe, or need more highlight.
Yeah.
Mm. One thing I wanted to talk about, we've already kind of touched on accessibility a little bit, but I think this sort of plays into it, is like the presentational kind of colors that Lucas, you were working on before. And I think, Anthony, this probably applies to the product that you're working on, where you have different labels that represent Oh, yeah. things. We're all kind of working on similar products here.
Yeah, tags.
Tags, sure, yeah, whatever you want to call the component. I think that'd be interesting to like hear your perspective on a little bit, Lucas, because at GitHub, I think we used to have user-generated, or I mean, we still do have user-generated colors, right? So you can pick from the full spectrum of colors for your labels, and that becomes tricky for accessibility, but also like how are we handling using color alone versus like including other visual elements to denote different labels or tags when color isn't enough, especially for specific, like for colorblind themes and so on from there. So what are some things you're thinking about with that topic these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think the accessibility aspect is not so problematic in general because labels are, I mean, they say what they are. So the color are a good help, but they are not necessary. The only thing is that you, of course, need contrast, which we like what we currently do, because we still have those user generated colors, is that we just calculate that, which is somewhat tricky. Sometimes it doesn't quite work. The problem is also that you have, of course, light and dark mode. And at GitHub, we have some other modes like low contrast mode. And the labels don't really respect that so well. I mean, light and dark mode, they do. But this gets very complex, and then colors can look very similar, and users of course at different points may choose a new color that is very similar to a color they chose, I don't know, like 3 months ago, and then you don't really have this distinguishability whatever between those labels anymore. So that's why the idea is basically to move towards a world where we have this is actually then a large set of colors that a user can choose from, somewhat large, so that they're still distinguishable, even though not in an accessibility like context probably. So then you would need to have a 3:1 contrast, which is very hard, I guess, to have between colors of the same brightness. I think this is more about, it's kind of an individual choice for users, and we want to allow this choice but integrate those labels more into our system, where we can then support a light low contrast mode where the labels don't stick out like crazy, or high contrast mode where we increase the contrast. And that's kind of what all the things that I'm working on anyway. It's very complex. It's a love and hate topic at the same time.
I mean, yeah, you need a lot of context to get up to speed on it. Anytime I'm trying to like review some of the work you're doing, I have to like reset my whole brain to think about labels and colors and like presentational skills. I'm curious, Anthony, how you all handle labels in your product. Do you have just a set number of colors that people can choose from? I don't even know if there is the option to choose label colors in your app.
Yeah, so when you're tagging the sort of tasks that you're working on, we let you, so a tag will be defined up front, probably by someone, you know, in the team. So you're choosing from a set list of tags that someone else in your team has defined already, generally. But if you're creating one, if you're that person defining tags, then you get by default a choice of, I think it's like 6 or 7 colors that we've defined. And then you've got a further option for a custom color that I think we offer you a color. So I never define these because I'm not the one setting tags in my company. But so I never click on it, but I'm pretty sure we've got like a full color picker that you could use if you wanted to. And that doesn't just affect tag. We also use colors for if you want to choose an icon to be able to recognize things like different pages or different boards or different spaces. Then you can choose an icon and then choose a color to apply to it. And so that's basically just for recognizability or disambiguation. I suspect the icons that you can choose for things like pages and spaces, it's less important that those be sort of recognizably different, especially because you can choose an icon to apply it to. And so it's a different shape as well. But the tags, yeah, we show the tags on their own with no label, sitting in the sort of Kanban style board view, just so you can quickly see, oh, these tags are applied to this. And so at that point, you need to know the colors. And I always find it interesting because I think it's easy as designers and probably appropriate in most cases to essentially give that choice over to the person who's using it in the final case, you know, the user. And we kind of wash our hands of it because they're making the choice. And so if they don't recognize the difference between their tag colors, then that doesn't matter because we've given them the full customizable range of colors, you know. But it's also something that designers can help with, right? We can set these sensible defaults that mean that they make the better choices. And we see it in our design tools, you know, that there's no good, it's quite rare to see a really good sensible default value in a design tool for things like line height or text size or whatever, and or typeface even. And so there are definitely choices that designers at every level can make to improve that situation for the next person down who's slightly less aware of why they should be choosing X over Y. And I suspect that's even harder when, you know, the product's even bigger, like in your case, because you've probably got people at companies with thousands of people who are using these tags every day. The chances of them becoming or using tag colors that are a bit less usable becomes much higher, you know, the bigger the team gets. So I don't envy the challenge, even though I experience it myself.
Yeah, selfishly, I just want it to all look perfect and like be using similar color. Like it looks a little chaotic when you see a board with full of user generated colors, even if like it's not intentional. It's just if you don't make it easy to pick colors that look nice together, it's going to end up looking kind of chaotic. But
it's hard to imagine designing the interface. It's hard but also fun to imagine designing the interface that lets you pick, let's say, tag colors that will work well together. Because if you really wanted to offer the full customizability, but then say, here are some sort of guidelines we can give you automatically, press this button and we'll sort of magically alter all these things so they work well together. That's basically the same as designing the color choices in a design system in the first place.
Mm.
But I'm also curious, because you work at such a large organization and you have lots of large organizations as your customers, I'm curious if you've done any analytics about how many colors people actually use across their own sort of user chosen tag systems. Like, do people only end up using 3 or 4 colors ever, right?
I mean, we definitely know that there are companies, including ourselves, who use a lot of different colors and have still this issue of colors clashing. But I don't know how many colors people use. But I feel we have a lot of like, visually, you can already notice that this is a problem because you can pick very light and very dark colors. And then in dark mode, of course, we have to somehow transform them so that they work on a dark background. So there you lose a lot of this contrast. So that's already one issue. And then also just because you define, just like in your case, the labels in one place and then add them somewhere else, you end up with a lot of colors that really don't match and contrast very hard. And then depending on the color, the text changes as well. So you either have white or black text because we need the contrast. So this just is like a very, like an explosion of different visual kind of styles and visual impressions there, and takes a lot of attention, even though it's not the most important case, let's say, or the most important part of the UI.
I should know this because I work here. How are we handling dark mode? Are we changing the opacity and making it like slightly?
No. Okay. No, no. We calculate color. So basically we take the hex color that we get from the users, and then we calculate we basically transform this to HSLoof and then do some calculations to have a somewhat similar looking, I don't know, darkish version of the color with a light or like intense color text on top. Which means if you have like a light green and a dark green in light mode, in dark mode they will both be the same-ish color.
Right.
If the hue is the same, they're basically the same color, which is also problematic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask, you mentioned earlier that you definitely know that your organization and others use lots of colors for those labels. Can you put a rough number on it just so I've got a context?
No, I have no idea, sorry. But the thing is, we don't record the colors you used. So basically, if you don't save the hex value, every time you create a color that looks somewhat similar, it is already a different hex value, right?
Right.
If you don't like record this. But I don't know. We also at some point, I think, changed our analytics in a way, and I haven't looked into this yet.
We probably know how many labels people use in their projects, which would probably give us an indication that if they were picking different colors for all of them, which they probably are, that would give us some insight, which would be kind of cool.
Also, yeah, but is it like 10, 50, 100, 1,000? What kind of
scale? Oh, no. I don't know. It's 10,
I mean,
10 to
it
20.
Depends.
20 max.
Yeah, but don't we have like 100 labels or something?
Oh, I guess you're right in our, it depends, like on a repo level, like I'm thinking about our primitives repo, like there's like 10 maybe.
Yeah.
But at the, like our team's project has like, you're probably right. It probably does have like close to 50, maybe. It's kind of hard.
I mean, you can do a lot of project management and stuff like Kanban style with the product as well. And there, of course, you can use labels. So this is also a use case for some teams. I mean, and other teams I worked with before they actually used this, not just for issues or something, but really also to say, I don't know, this belongs to this track, and even like for time tracking, like how many, not hours, but you know, how when you guess sprint tickets, those kind of things. Yeah. So there's a lot of hacking with labels to kind of make it work for you.
I'm always interested in this, that sort of way of thinking about it, of getting down to what are people actually doing, which is why, you know, research and discovery is so good. But especially in these sorts of interface challenges, we are thinking, okay, what do we need to support? If you go and find out, okay, so on average, people use 4 colors and the most we've ever seen is 10 colors, that suddenly makes your job so much easier than if you need to support 1,000 colors. I mean, not 1,000 colors, that's hopefully no one has to deal with that problem. But suddenly the way you need to solve that problem becomes much more broad. And maybe you do need an interface where they can define 1,000 colors that will work sort of programmatically with each other. I guess a simpler example is people's names. If you do an actual, like, in the past, I've pulled sort of everyone's names that use our product or is listed in our product into a spreadsheet just so I can look at the length variety. But okay, so we need this to support lengths up to, you know, 30 characters because some people have quite long names. Before you actually look into those numbers, you're making all sorts of ridiculous assumptions about, oh, we only show, you know, 15 characters for this because no one will ever have a blank longer than 15 characters. And I guess it's the same for numbers, for colors. No one will ever need more than 5 colors for labels or whatever.
Yeah, I think another issue is, of course, once you give people a color picker, you basically give them nearly unlimited color choices. And then whatever you give them afterwards, you take away the color they wanted, right? You pick like the color that you use for your company, and now it's not available anymore. This is kind of like another issue you kind of have to think of. Of course, you cannot necessarily solve it, but those are always, of course, discussions then you have. And that's what people are a little bit afraid of. I mean,
I like the thought that it's almost a dark pattern to say, okay, we'll give you these predefined colors that you can clip very easily, the little swatches. And then we won't give you a color picker, but on the right-hand side over here, we'll give you a text field for you to put in a hex code. And so if you really care about custom colors, you can go and define those somewhere else and bring them in. But we're not going to give you a color picker, because then you're making our lives much harder. We're going to make your life harder so that we don't have to. But until then, you get these, you know, 10 well-defined colors. And that almost feels like a dark pattern in terms of you're sort of discouraging certain behavior that probably they would like. Because most people don't have access to a color picker very easily, or they don't know where to open it up on macOS or whatever.
Most people don't memorize their favorite hex codes.
What?
I have an off black and an off white memorized that I use in everything every time I need to type something in. Other than that,
okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just added a little bit of friction could, I guess, be a dark pattern. But
oh, you could add the idea from before, and you have to pay, and then a color gets added to the color picker.
It's an upsell.
It's a random, color gets added.
A random color. That's good. Like a loot box.
Yeah.
How many colors do you want? I want 10, and it's just, they're all dark yellows.
Oh yeah, we'll have to pass this by the brand, the marketing team, and tell them about our idea to upsell the label colors.
I would like to hear, as you said earlier, about rules or guidelines. So maybe you could ask that question, Katie, because I'm extremely curious.
You want me to ask you for your rules or guidelines, or you want to hear Lucas's rules? I know you have.
Sorry. Earlier you mentioned, I thought you were talking to Lucas earlier, you said, I know you've got rules and guidelines.
No, I was talking to you.
Oh, okay.
You're the one that writes these things down. But
yeah, that's why I'm so interested. I thought, oh, Lucas has these rules and guidelines as well. I need Katie to ask that question later.
Well, now, Lucas, now I'm curious, do you have any like rules and guidelines that you follow? I think outside of GitHub, obviously, because we've got our own set of rules, but on your personal projects, is there anything you sort of gravitate towards if you're designing something new in terms of color?
No, not really. I try to, like, because, I mean, design system work is so much about rules and guidelines. I try to
get out of this.
And I think I like rules, so I very easily fall into rules, and then everything looks the same. So I'm trying to not do rules outside if I can.
Do you have any sort of safe defaults where you might not ever see this written down in a book, but it's something that you always just do anyway because it makes everything much easier?
No. No, certainly not. I'd love to.
This is the problem with someone who is an expert in color, is that probably they don't need the rules and guidelines, whereas people who don't want to specialize, they need sort of quick hacks to get things started. So we should probably ask you.
I'm not so sure that's true. I'm not so good with choosing colors, actually. That's the thing. Like, working on colors is one thing, but getting good colors is horrible. Like, I'm really not good. I just play around or, I don't know, do weird stuff. And it's really hard for me, actually. I'd love to have
fascinating
good defaults.
You're such a systems designer.
I think I'd be surprised if I met many people who work with color in my life who are good at choosing colors. Everyone I've met, they've admitted, when I've asked about it, they've admitted to basically playing around, nudging things around until it sort of feels okay. And so they've got the eye for it. But I think actually going in and defining it in the first place, I'm not sure that humans are just good at that sort of thing in general. I think it's trial and error, whatever you're doing, is my assumption. One day I'm sure I'll meet some superhuman that basically, oh, we need these 5 colors before they've even started playing with it. But it's hard to believe that really exists. And I think that's what a lot of non-designers assume is happening.
We're just superhuman.
But I don't know, I'm not so good with color pickers either. I find them very complicated to actually pick colors that I like when you like move this around. And I feel maybe I saw, I don't know where, but somebody built a plugin for, I think it was even for Figma, I didn't try it out, where you basically mix colors like you would with painting, where you kind of like paint colors on top of each other, and this is how you mix colors. And I guess if you're an artist, maybe you actually you have a good way maybe to defining your colors, because you it's more physical. It's not like moving stuff around, so that may be easier. I don't know.
I find that a bit strange, because that artistic approach, because artists are generally recreating something either in their mind or from a photo they've taken or something. They're essentially matching colors. Same with people who mix paints and things. They're trying to match a color they found, or they're looking at a swatch or whatever and just picking one. And so the sorts of color work that the two of you do more than myself is that you are choosing colors from scratch. And I don't think there's many people who do that, apart from designers who have to sort of, okay, let's define some colors up front that we can then use forever. That's actually a really tall order to even get that set up so that it is useful forever, which is maybe why people define 100 colors up front, because then they know it'll be flexible from then on. Whereas if you're trying to paint someone's face, you're sort of matching on these sort of beige tones a lot, you know, so painting, mixing colors by paint until you can see that they're the same. So it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
But
I think it's a bit of like give and take though. Like you're kind of going back and forth as a systems designer between, like, maybe you start with a palette and then you put it in application and see how it's actually working in the interface or the components you're working with. And then usually you got to like go back and make some tweaks to the actual palette because you forgot about state, or like you forgot about contrast. So it's like you sort of have to go back and forth. I think people run into trouble when they don't do that. They start with the scales, they throw you a palette, and then they're like, here's your palettes. And they don't think about how they're actually going to be used in context, like each part of the scale, like not just saying this is the middle of the blue scale, we know this is our accent color, just go up, just create different shades of that and we're probably fine. Like actually thinking about the math behind that and like what are the different values, how much black are you adding, how much white are you adding, specifically in application, like in context. I think that's the tricky part.
That's why I quite like the point you made, Lucas, about wireframing or designing in black and white, because sometimes you can design it in grayscale and then you're only focused on the, which maybe is why people suggest this, you're only focused then on the contrast, the sort of the brightness differences. And then hopefully you can just slide that sort of saturation slider up on each of those different gray levels if you need color in that area, and hopefully you don't. And then you sort of know that you've already got the brightness fixed. There might be some cases where actually adding hue and saturation changes the sort of perceived brightness, but I know there are different color models to try and handle that. So hopefully using the correct color model to make that sort of approach work. But yeah, whenever I see something that just lets you pick color palettes purely as colors, I sort of don't like the idea, because it, like you're saying, Katie, it's not practical. And whenever I see people try to make tools where you can choose a color palette and it immediately applies it to a sort of mock interface, those excite me just because you are seeing it in context. Although often the context is not your context, and so you're still picking slightly wrong colors. But, you know, they're coloring sort of a website with those colors or something, and you're seeing it in action. That's a bit more practically useful, I think.
Yep.
I mean, I guess one issue, though, that you have if you only pick specific colors and don't have the scales is that if at some point you need a different color from the scale, and then you build the scale, and then this other color just really doesn't work, and then you're kind of screwed. So, I mean, for this reason, it may be good to at least build the scales, even if you kind of like hide them afterwards, but so you know you're kind of safe. Because that's always a little bit like you have a system for how you build a scale by like some mass that you put there. Then you have to adjust for contrast, which is different per color. Like, I mean, on yellow and blue is completely different, right? It's really hard to match this. And then it has to look good as well, right? I mean, you can have like very easily accessible colors, but if they all don't look good and you have like weird browns, then you don't want this, of course. You still want it to be pleasing to the eye. So that's kind of very complicated. So maybe it's good to build them out and then only pick the ones you need, hide them from the rest of the company. And if they need one, you can pull it out of the hat.
I like that. Just design systems, hiding things from the rest of the company. Yeah. You can only use what we tell you.
Part of me wonders how much people set up these large color scales in advance because, or partly because of the naming problem that comes up later if you don't define, because you name them sort of 0 up to, or 100 up to 1,000 or whatever, or 100 up to 900. And so that sort of thing makes it a nightmare to insert colors, or it's a bit easier because you can do 50s, but if you don't name them right, it's a nightmare to insert colors later. If you're doing like purple 1, purple 2, purple 3, you need a purple 1.5. You know, everyone goes gets really annoyed. And so maybe part of the reason that people define so many colors up front is because of the naming issue, where they don't want to have to come back and sort of carve out those places again. I wonder basically how many color choices are made because of practical problems like that, that they're foreseeing, even if they never come up. Which is a shame, but I can also see, you know, the reason why it's useful.
Mm. Yeah, we have that problem at GitHub, and Lucas and I have our little hacks in place where we're, because we can't really add colors in between existing color scale items. So we just combine them and make different shades to like slightly darken something or slightly lighten it by, I don't know, what's the term that we're using for it? We have a term.
The mixing?
Mixing. Yeah, we're mixing. Yeah. Which is, again, something that is like hidden away from the rest of everybody at the company and just kind of like a design systems team little bit of a hack, that these colors don't exist on the scale, but they are like a product of the scale, which I think is fine. But in my opinion, those things should be handled by the scale and you shouldn't need hacks of mixing. But you're right, once you have your scales, you can't really just add stuff in between existing ones, because then it's doesn't really fit the naming convention or the pattern at large.
Does any part of you feel like you've opened sort of Pandora's box or a can of worms there?
Definitely.
Oh yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, the main issue we were trying to solve, I think, is that if you have interactive states and put a black on top or a white on top, depending on which color, you would need different opacity values and stuff like this, and it can get very muddy. So we are trying to kind of like generate a darker version. So instead of putting black on top, which also technically creates a new color, we say like, give me a color between step 5 and 6 or something like this.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the solution. But yeah, it is very dangerous and scary, but it's not so easy to do for people who are not like working on the color system. So you can't just...
It's secret.
Yeah, I'm just imagining a small team at some large company working late at night, and there's one lamp on the desk, and one of them's like, how about if we do this? And then it cuts to the whole Earth exploding from like really far out. You just see it explode. It's like, it was a slippery slope they started that day. Hopefully not. Hopefully color choices at GitHub don't cause the Earth to explode. But, you know, if it does happen, you heard it here first, aliens.
It was our
I
fault.
I predicted it.
Our names are all over the pull requests for it, so we're forever tied to it.
And 16 different label colors applied, which are all beautifully contrasting with each other.
Okay, I feel like this is maybe a good place to start wrapping up. We covered a lot of stuff about color. Color is very complicated. I don't know. Any final thoughts, Lucas or Anthony?
It's just hard for everybody, I guess. I mean, that's the thing. There's no real solution. That's with colors. Like, you hate it one day, you love it the next day.
Yeah, well, it's good to know. It's good to know for anyone who's starting out that color's hard for everyone, because they might get started, get a bit overwhelmed, and then think, how are people more experienced than me handling this? And maybe those people are not handling it. Maybe they're just muddling along.
For sure.
Yeah, and so my parting thought is, don't use yellow.
Just avoid it at all costs.
Very good. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's one of my secret tips and tricks that I thought you were asking Lucas about. Turns out you're asking me. The main one is, don't use yellow.
Yeah, I tend to follow that rule too.
Yeah, I'd say that too.
And blue is always good. So it's the opposite. Don't use yellow, but blue is always good. Those are the two sort of counterweighted hacks you can use.
Okay, easy. Yeah, just follow those rules. Everything else is very complicated. But yeah, we're all struggling. It's so easy to see on Twitter, especially like some of the color experts in our field, especially the CSS ones, because the way they talk about color spaces and technology is like, wow, kind of how do they know all of this stuff? But they're probably a little bit confused too. We're all a little bit confused. So I don't know. Take that with what you will. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for being our first guest, Lucas. This is very fun to have you on. Really appreciate your perspective.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.